Starting your own painting business is both exciting and terrifying. Arguably, one of the biggest hurdles to overcome is learning the art of bidding a job. Listen and learn from two painting experts as they share a combined 45 years of experience. They'll give you the knowledge and confidence you need to sell, sell, sell. Let's join the conversation right now.
Brandon, you do this almost every day. Where do we start?
Oh boy, now that right there is a loaded question. And the thing that I would first of all say is that people bid so differently. Everybody's got their own little take on it, right? Some people, they do it by the square foot. Other people, they might choose to do like a time and materials. Some people, it's a hybrid of both of them. And so what I'm going to do today is I'm going to show you what I do. And then, of course, you can modify it for however works for you. Okay, so when I go to a job here, obviously, we start with a blank sheet of paper. Now, how I bid things, mentally, I'm thinking, I'm not necessarily trying to figure out how long it takes me. I need to know how long it takes the average painter, because I'm not competing with myself. I'm competing with them. And because of that, how I always do it, I make myself just this little chart, this little graph, and it just makes things a whole lot easier for me. This is what I do. Whenever you look at my bidding process, you'll always see one of these graphs. Now, we're just going to take an interior, an average interior. You go in and you look at a bedroom. So you put bedroom one, right? That's what you put. Sorry for the bad handwriting. There's a couple things that you need to think about when you're bidding. You have your prep, right? Your prep means that you're going to set up and take down, right? You have your labor to actually do the job. And then finally, you have your materials. So these are the big three things. And then, you know, you have other, because sometimes stuff comes up in a particular project that you need to think about for whatever reason. So we're going to do walls only is what we're going to end up doing. So the average bedroom, and I'm just going to tell you this, the average painter, it takes them approximately 2 hours to prep. It takes them about 2 hours of labor, and it takes them approximately 2 gallons. I'm just saying this is generalization is what we're doing. Now, let's just say there's a crack in the wall. I need to do a little bit of a drywall repair. Yes, Chris.
When you say 2 gallons of material, are you saying it's at like a standard 12 by 12 bedroom, a 10 by 10 bedroom? What are you kind of basing this number off of?
I'm basing this number off of 25 years of experience. I'm just talking like a normal bedroom, right? Which is typically a 10 by 12, 12 by 12. Most of the time, at least in Minnesota, people do not paint the closets. And the reason why is because the door is shut between having your boots on the floor and having your clothes hanging. You see about this much wall is what you end up seeing. So people, at least in Minnesota, do not paint closets typically. We're talking just essentially the four walls is what we're talking. Let's just say that there is a drywall repair. There might be a drywall repair. Sorry for the bad handwriting. I'll fix that for $75 is what I'll fix. So I got that. It takes 2 hours of prep, 3 hours of labor, and approximately 3 gallons. We go to a living room. The average living room takes about three, and between two and three, but we're going to do three, and I'll explain that later. The average bathroom, depending on the size of the bathroom, it might take 1 or 2 hours of prep. It might take 1 hour or 2 hours of labor, depending on the size of the bathroom. So we'll just do one. And a lot of times it'll take between 1 and 2 gallons, depending on the size of the bathroom. So if it's a powder room, obviously it's going to be smaller. You can see the formula here that we're setting up, right? And then it's very simple to be able to do the math. In the end, this is going to be 9 hours. This is going to be 9 hours. And this is going to be 9 gallons right there. Know exactly how long everything's going to take us to prep. You got about one man day in prep, one man day in labor, and 9 gallons of material. Now, you might notice that my material count is a little high. The average bedroom typically takes about 1.5 gallons, maybe 2.25 gallons. These are all things that you think about. The excess actually helps to offset cost for your tape, for your plastic, for other things. So that doesn't mean you're going to be buying this many gallons. It's just you need a way to be able to account for the other material costs in your particular estimate that you're going to be doing.
I agree with that. And then also any extra materials that you have, you get to leave there on site for the homeowner that they can then use for touch up. Or if they add something, like you said, they typically don't do a closet, but say they were like, hey, we now want the closet. You then have that essentially built into the materials already to cover that extra.
Exactly. And that's why you always have to have this other column, because it tells you each room what needs to be done. Let's just say that there is a stain on the wall in the living room. It's not that big, but it's something that needs to be addressed. So you got that. You need to prime it. A lot of times I'll just carry a rattle can of primer and you can spray that on, but you need to account for that cost. That could be $25 to be able to rattle can that primer on for you. So you know what your hourly rate is, which I can't tell you what mine is because it doesn't matter where you live. So you know you have 18 hours and you have 9 gallons. Now, this particular job, I might start by buying 5 gallons. It won't take me 18 hours to do these things. It might take me 14 hours to do that. But all these numbers, I can assure you, is what it takes the average painter to be able to do. And that's who you're bidding against. You're bidding against the average painter. That's how I look at it. Other questions that I might ask is I might ask, how many total colors? Because each color costs you money. If you have, let's just say, a secondary color, and I have 3/4 of a gallon, I can't take that 3/4 of a gallon, and I can't use it over into this other area. These are all different things that you need to consider. If you're going to be doing an exterior, you might do things just slightly different. The thing is, you got to pressure wash, right? Which is part of prep. You need to mask off. There's labor. There's material, right? Those are all the things. Then you look at the front of the house. Now, there might be 2 different colors, right? You might have a main color, and then you make another chart of the same thing for the trim color, right? Because each of these, if you got the front of the house, the left side, the back side, the right side, depending how you want to mix it up. See, this is a wonderful way for me to be able to keep track how long things should take me. I look at this bedroom, I know that it should take me a morning, right? If I do it quicker than a morning, I'm making money. If I'm doing it slower than a morning, then I am not as fast as the average painter for this normal size bedroom, a 10 by 12 or 10 by 10.
And the other nice thing about bidding, like you said, against the quote unquote average painter that's out there, if you get it done faster, then the homeowners like it when you get projects done quicker. If all of a sudden you say, all right, I've got a day of labor in here. Well, if you get it done in 7 hours instead of 9 hours, all you're going to do is make that homeowner happy that you wrapped up sooner. You don't have to change any of these numbers. You just say, hey, everything went faster. Or knowing like you, Brandon, I know you're a very fast painter. If something were to change or something were to come up, well, you've still got that extra time built in that you set. All right, it's going to be a 2-day job. Well, you would typically do this job in 1.5 days. But if something were to come up, something that you didn't know as you're painting, or the homeowner changes something, or something in your personal life comes up, then you've still got that half day cushion essentially built in to cover you, and you still meet those existing homeowner expectations.
That's absolutely right. It's about covering yourself and covering things. Now, I will guarantee you from 25 years of experience, the average bedroom takes a certain amount. Like I can bid a job without typically looking at it just because I've been in so many homes. Unless you have like a really intricate, specialized home, I've been in split levels. I've been in Ramblers, typical 2-story home that has an entry that goes up a certain height. So it's like, if people tell me that, I already know within a pretty high degree of probability how much that's going to take me and how much it's going to cost. And it's because I've kept track of my numbers over 25 years. And I've also kept track of other painters. And I know exactly what it takes the average painter. Like this bedroom, I know I can get it done in probably 2.5-3 hours. I just made money there. It takes about a gallon and a half on the walls. Depending if the walls are textured, it might take more. Tweak it however you want to. So I gain half a gallon there. So you can see each room, I'm competing against the other guy. So when we look at the material part, now we look at those gallons and we're like, you know what? That's obviously heavy-handed on the gallons. The reality is, yes, you're right. But I measure everything in paint. We think about if there's going to be tape. There could potentially be plastic. There's going to be drop cloths. You have to maintain those drop cloths. You have to wash them. You have brushes. You have roller covers. Even just running around and doing estimates, that costs money. So again, I choose to measure everything in paint. So just because it says 10 gallons, it probably only takes 5 or 6, but that extra few gallons goes toward all those other things.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it, because it'd be really hard to have a column that just said, all right, one roller, one brush, you know, a third of a roll of tape. I don't know. I mean, you could, I know there's Excel spreadsheets out here and, you know, you can really break all that deep down dive, but exactly. Yeah, no, that makes sense, because you've got to cover all of those costs. And there again, the drop cloths, like you said, you got to maintain them. But once you buy a couple of drop cloths, you can use those, if you maintain them, for multiple years. Mm-hmm. I've heard some people say that they bought their original drop cloth 30 years ago and they're still using it, which that's really good. And, you know, for a $40 drop cloth, I'm impressed.
Absolutely. But, you know, every so often you've got to take that thing, probably not to your house, but to the laundromat, right? And because you need a big heavy duty washing machine and dryer, and then you have to sit there and you have to pay to be able to do that. So all that money needs to be made. Otherwise, you know, people are like, oh, I may make X amount of dollars an hour. Well, no, you don't. You don't, because you have, you know, all these other things that come into play, right? So I know you don't make that money unless you account for making that money.
And that's a good, simple way, the way you bid it, is to account for all of those ancillary costs that, there again, when you're on a job site bidding about, all right, I got to paint these four walls, you don't always take into account of, all right, that's a $20 roller right there that I have to figure into that, or, oh, I've got to maintain, that's right, I've got to go and wash my drop cloths. I've got to, you know, find a dumpster to throw a garbage away in, you know, all those extra little things that you just have to build in costs with. So that makes perfect sense. And yeah, and there again, if you come in under, that's okay, because you're accounting for those costs, and then anything extra, that just goes right back into your pocket or right back into the business. You got into business to make money, I'm assuming. If you wanted to do charity work, there's a lot of great places to do charity work and they'd be happy to have you. But if you're trying to feed your family and you're trying to, you know, run your business, you have to make money. You have to turn a profit. So that's the goal at the end of the day. You can throw out any numbers you want, but at the end of the day, you've got to make money.
Absolutely. And the thing with how I bid, I know it probably sounds really weird to a lot of guys. And you know what? If you got something that works for you, that's totally fine. I, through my years of growing up in the trade, I've seen how a lot of guys choose to bid. And I tried to find a balance between not necessarily a time and materials, but just a hybrid version of that versus if you were doing a square foot. Well, square foot price can be weird, because if it's a 12 foot ceiling versus an 8 foot ceiling, that totally messes up your square foot price. The way I do it, I come in, I look at it, I know how long it takes me. And from 25 years of experience, I know how long it takes the average painter. And I also know I'm competing against the average painter. And because of that, I win a lot of jobs and I am a very profitable business.
You had brought up the labor costs. Now, as the owner of your own business, we've talked about this, you and I have talked about this over the years. is your labor, you know, you as the owner of the business, do you pay yourself out of a labor cost, or do you pay yourself out of the profits of the jobs? Or is there some sort of fun hybrid? And I know every business is essentially, it's different, but in your estimation, what would you recommend?
As you just eloquently put, everyone is going to be different. You have to know what works for you. I will say for years, I just used my business bank account as a separate Brandon account. And I've been I've been scolded by my accountant that that's not the way to do it. So this is how I would recommend doing it, because you also need to make sure that the IRS is happy, is I give myself a wage. So I have a wage, right? Whether it's $30 an hour or $120 an hour, I don't know what it is, but your area, that's where you got to figure that out. And we can talk about that later, because there's a way of trying to gauge approximately what your area pays. So you got to do that. I get a wage, like every month I give myself a paycheck. It's set. My accountant has told me this is how much you make a year, Brandon. However, there's a thing called a distribution. So let's just say you have $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 sitting in the bank account, or $5,000 sitting in the bank account. You know there's no bills coming up and you're like, Brandon needs to buy a new pair of shoes, or Brandon wants to go on vacation or whatever. I can give myself a distribution, is what it's called. And that gets taxed differently. And we're going to talk about getting a good accountant in a later episode. But these are all things that you need to be thinking about. You have to give yourself a wage. The government wants to see a wall between, for me, personal Brandon and business Brandon. There has to be a wall in between. And when money crosses over that wall, it needs to be labeled a certain way so that essentially they can track everything.
That all makes sense. Yeah. And to that exact point about the distribution, I know there's a ton more details that we can't get into right now. But when you do that, that's the profit center. So that five or 10 or that business Brandon account that you have sitting over that's got all that money in it, that's the money that you made in profit. That's supposed to be reinvested back into the business. So if you decide to take some of that money out to go on vacation, or, you know, you need to fix your vehicle or whatever it is, just know that you're essentially taking money that you should be reinvesting in the business to go play, which you can do. It's your business. You can do whatever you want. You just have to take that into account, that that money won't be there if you went and played with it. So just one more fun thing to be aware of. And I like the way you're bidding this. I think it makes sense from just a simplicity standpoint. You can see, all right, it breaks it all down of what everything is going to take. When you're talking about just for the paints themselves, you know, sometimes people will say, oh, well, I don't want the best of the best. And I know when you bid a job, you bid it with top of the line premium materials. Does that affect your numbers if they say, I just want, say, a contractor grade material because I'm flipping the house or I'm selling the house shortly? What does that change in that equation? I know it doesn't change the number. It might change the gallons a little bit, but overall, does that just change your final bid number at the end?
That's another really good question, Chris. So I think in a previous episode, we talked that basically I bid a job for one of two levels of paint. I use the premium level, and then I use a mid-grade level. I never use a low-end level of paint. And the reason for that is the better quality the paint, well, selfishly, the easier it is for me to apply said paint, right? As an added bonus, the homeowner gets a better quality product, right? So if you're just thinking purely selfishly about yourself, get as good of a paint as you possibly can. I typically get two levels of paint. This is how I sell it. You either get the premier, family-friendly, most washable paint that said company makes. People love that. That's the key words, right? Or the mid-level paint. Like Chris, you said, I'm selling this house. I don't need it. I don't need the Taj Mahal of paint or the Cadillac of paint, right? I just need it to look good for the next guy. Well, I say this paint, it's a solid mid-grade paint. You can put it on. you can have confidence that if you live in this house for another 3, 4, 5 months before it sells, you're going to be good. But you can also feel good knowing that the next person, you bought them a little bit of time before they'll have to repaint. And most people are like, they feel really good about that because now they're being a nice person, right? As far as the bidding aspect of things, we talked about in a previous episode, you must make money on all these different aspects, right? I have a certain price that I charge for the premium paint, and then I have a certain price that I charge for the mid-grade paint. And so the labor stays the same because no matter what, it's going to take you X amount of hours to put on the material. So the only thing that would change then would be the material aspect. For most houses, it really is only a couple $100s, right? Because a mid-grade to a high-end paint, maybe it's $20 or $30 a gallon, depending on how much you pay and how much all that stuff is. And, you know, if you're only talking 10 gallons, that's only $200 or $300. So that's typically how that goes.
That makes sense. I would guess that stays the same. So say you bid with the premium product from Hirschfields. All of a sudden the homeowner comes in and says, you know what? I don't want to use Hirschfields. I want Benjamin Moore and I want their top of the line. That's the same equation. It's just going from, okay, well, normally I bid it at X number of dollars. You want to be at this number of dollars. That's fine. You know, and you just adjust the final bid number at that point as well.
Exactly. And the way that I have my little bidding thing set up, I developed that, which I know it looks stupid and it looks simple, but I developed that over years of talking to other people and doing my own thinkings on matters. And it makes it super simple. Oh, you don't want to paint the living room? We cross off the living room. Super easy. You want to use a different quality paint? Well, I know how many gallons I've bid for the paint. So the price difference is $10. Okay. $10 times whatever that price is. Well, here's the difference. There you go. It makes things super easy to be able to adjust.
And when do you find the time to bid? Because as we talked, and you mentioned in this one, and we talked in another episode, is that you've got to, as a business owner, you've got to be making money on whenever you're doing stuff. And if you're not painting, typically, you're not making money, unless you've got a crew and they're painting, you know, that's a little bit farther on down the road. So when do you bid? I know, again, you have 25 years of experience. You can talk to people over the phone. They can send you pictures and you can bid from wherever you're at based on some pictures. And that's one of the beauties of technology. And if you're just starting out, you don't have that experience to do that. You're starting out. So do you bid like every Tuesday you do your bids? Do you do your bids on Saturdays? Is there a tip or a trick that you have in that aspect? Or is it just whenever you've got a free few minutes?
It's a hybrid of all those things. I'll say typically I try to bid like twice a week because by that time you have multiple bids that have piled up. And if it goes longer than a day, people are calling you and they're like, hey, where's my bid for this or that? So typically it's twice a week is when I do it, and it's at night. And this is, we've talked about this in a previous episode. This is where the commitment comes in. It's been a long day. You're tired. At this point, maybe the family has gone to bed. And now guess what? Instead of relaxing or watching the game, you're sitting there on the computer typing out an estimate and trying to bid a job. So that's where the commitment comes into play. But that's how it goes, especially when you're starting out. You got to steal those moments whenever you can. Family's important. So for me, it's always after they go to bed.
I would recommend, especially when you're first starting out, try and work within a tight geographical area so that you're not driving Minneapolis and St. Paul from one extreme to the other. And it could take you 3 hours depending on traffic. We are an easy metro compared to some of the bigger ones. But that being said, you still don't want to spend 6 hours in the car to go do a bid that takes you a half hour, 45 minutes to do that you may or may not get. So if you can tighten it up, and then also if you have multiple bids, try and time those into a geographical area and also try and hit them back to back, because then you just go boom, 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 and then you can get back onto something else and then take all that information, like you said, write it up in the evening when you've got those free moments that you have.
That's right. And a lot of times for me, I would say that when I go look at a house, it's always either at the very beginning or at the end of the day. And of course, if I'm going to be in this city on Tuesday, then I tell a person, well, I'll be available on Tuesday. What works better for you? Such a time a.m. or such and such a time p.m. There's your choices, right? So I try to not go out of my way too much. And you made such an excellent point about staying within a tight geographical area. I know when you're starting out, you're just throwing things out and you're seeing what sticks. I had a friend who was ragging on me because he could go to the other side of Minneapolis, which, like you said, was an hour, hour and a half drive. And he's like, oh, I could make $7 an hour more over there than you make over here. And then I said to him, but yeah, but you're driving 2.5, 3 hours a day. The money, I mean, doesn't add up. You're actually making less than me and your home less than I am. And of course, he didn't think that through. And then, of course, he didn't feel as smart after he thought about it. But, you know, these are the things that you have to consider.
All those little things that you take into account. And there again, you don't have to know all this stuff from the get-go. There's going to be bumps. There's going to be learning curves. And all of a sudden, you're going to go, oh, shoot, that didn't work. That was dumb of me. Or, whoa, that worked really well that one time, and it's never worked well again. So, you know, you have to, like you said, you have to balance all this stuff out. And I can say, utilize the technology that you have at your hand. We saw what you're doing. You do all your bids right on your phone. Do you even use old-fashioned, you know, paper anymore and, you know, pen?
No, I use a stylus is what I use. But, you know, however you want to do it. But personally, I literally showed you on my phone. I shared my screen and I showed you. If you look through all my job notes, that's what you see. And the great thing about doing it on a phone is I can take a picture of the house or of the wall, or and I can have that right in those job notes. So if I do an exterior, I'll take a picture of proverbially all four sides. That way, if 4 months later, I'm going to be doing the exterior, of course, I don't remember what it looked like because I've looked at 80 houses between now and then. I can look at those pictures. I'm like, oh, there it is. And everything is in one spot.
That sounds like we could make a complete episode in and of itself for record keeping, but you're completely 100%. When you're out doing the bid, gather as much information as you can. Like you said, play 20 questions with the homeowner and then take pictures, because you might not get that job, like you said, for 4 months. It might be you bid it, they accept it, or they don't get back to you. All of a sudden they call you 6 months down or even a year down the road and say, hey, we like your numbers. We're finally getting around to doing this. And you're going, who are you? Where was this? But if you can pull all that back up, then you've got that frame of reference. And side note, if you do a bid today and 6 months to a year later, they call you and say they're ready to go, you should probably adjust your bid up because materials have costs have gone up. Your labor costs have gone up. Materials costs have gone up. So make sure you factor that in. Again, you're making money. You need to make money. And they'll argue with you and say, well, you bid it at this. And you say, well, yeah, that was a year ago. Prices have changed, and that's an okay conversation to have. But all that being said, complete records for your reference, and also then for the homeowners when they say, well, in the bid you said you were going to paint this wall, and you can go back and say, actually, no, we talked about not doing this, or hey, why aren't you painting the closets? Well, when we talked about it, you didn't want the closets painted. We can definitely add it at this point in time.
Yes, and that's where having a detailed estimate comes in handy. And we'll talk about that in a later episode, which I know we're saying that a lot, right? The other thing I'll say too about taking as many pictures as you can, it'll save your bacon sometimes, because sometimes people are like, well, you did this or you did that. And just because I took general pictures of the house, I can zoom in and I'd be like, that was there before. And then how do they argue with that, right? So pictures are your friend.
They definitely are. And then keep your notes as well, like you do. You keep everything in that one file. That's where it all lives. And then you can always return back to your notes just for the general, oh, all right, I needed, well, that's right. It was going to take me 9 hours to do this. It was going to take me, you know, 9 hours of prep and 9 hours of labor to paint, and then 20 gallons of paint. That doesn't seem right. And then you go back to your numbers. Oh, no, that was right, because we have X, Y, and Z. So when you're doing those orders, you've got all that information. And I think what you're doing is a great way to do it, utilizing the technology. And then again, this becomes easier. And if you ever just need a simple default I'm lost. I don't know how to bid. A third materials, a third labor, and a third profit. That's kind of been the way it's been forever. And you can dial and play with those numbers wherever you want. But that's always a good safe bet if you walk on a job and go, I'm overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. Run it that way.
It's okay to make money. And as we talked about in earlier episodes, you have a vehicle to maintain, to fuel, right? You have insurance, you know, you have other things to make yourself legal, and all that costs money. That money comes from somewhere. This is how you get it.
And again, profit nowadays can have a dirty connotation to it, but it's not. You need to make money. That's what you do. And that's very much okay. And if you are worried about it, if you're out there gouging your customers and you're way overcharging, the market is going to tell you by you not getting jobs. So then you need to dial it back. And if you, on the flip side of that, if you're winning every single job and you feel like you just can't keep up and you don't feel like you're making any money, guess what? Your bids are too low. You need to bring up your price. And there again, it's okay to do that. And it will take a learning curve and you'll go back and forth like this, which I'm sure you have over all these years. And eventually you'll kind of fall into a rhythm and go, oh, okay, this is where the market can handle. And this is where I need to be. I can go up a little bit, I can go down a little bit, depending on, all right, do I really need this job? Or, well, there's a lot here, I'm gonna bump it up. And it's also okay when you bid, if you're walking on a job going, wow, this is a lot of work. There is gonna be a ton of here. And I think this customer might be a real pain in the butt. You know, you can take that normal bid and go, I'm gonna add 10% just as a crazy tax, if you wanna call it that.
Stupid tax, is what I call it. Yeah, that's the technical term, Chris.
Right. I've heard some more flowery language used as that type of tax as well, which I won't say on this podcast. But yeah, you can call it whatever you want. But Darian, you got to take all that stuff into account. And those will come with experience where you go, okay, I can drop it a little bit because I really want this job. Or nope, this is a stupid tax job. This one's going to get a 25% stupid tax on top.
Yeah, exactly. And we're going to discuss a lot of this closure rate type stuff, what that is, where you should be in a future episode. But these are all things that you need to think about at this time.
I agree. And there again, everything we're talking about, we probably should have said this. This is episode 6. We probably should have said this in a few more episodes. We've been doing this for a lot of years. You've been actually running the business for 25 years. I've been selling paint to, you know, contractors like yourself for 20 years. These things that we talk about, this is not a set in stone. This isn't the way you have to do it. This is just what we know works and what we've seen work. But that doesn't mean that you might listen to some of this and go, well, that's dumb. Or you might take it for granted. And there's some stuff out there that we've missed, that we've probably missed over the years, that are, you know, some really, really cool stuff that we don't know about because we've got our systems.
Exactly. And in the end, you have to modify it for you. And I'm on all kinds of painters chat rooms in Facebook and all these other things. And everyone is like, how do I bid? Blah, 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 blah. So the reason for this episode is I can be like, here, there you go. That's how you bid. I'm not going to figure it out for you. I'll give you the tools to figure it out. And then it's on you.
Right. And you can always message us with questions. We'll definitely do our best to help you out that way. Any other tips or tricks or secrets you want to give out to the people?
Maybe in a future episode, Chris.
Maybe in a future episode. Yeah, we did tease it. Like I said, we've got more episodes coming. This was going to be a 9-part series. And what are we up to now? At least 12?
Yeah, at least. I think it's more than that. But yeah, it's at least 12.
And this might be one of those kind of never-ending series because there is so much that goes into running a business. So I think I'll leave it at that.
Now we'll look forward to the next episode.
Yeah, thank you for joining us and we'll see you next time.
As always, thank you for watching and don't forget to like and subscribe.